You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
I think. There we are.
Hey, everybody. It is Wednesday night. How's everybody doing? My name is Alex. The name of the show is American Whiner. Welcome. Welcome, everybody. Going to turn off the music as usual. There we go. Get the next shit queued up. There we go. All right. We are on. Everything is encoding. And the lock talk is on. All right, I always make sure of doing that when I always say what I'm doing just so I can make sure that it's actually done. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us tonight. My guest is my very good friend, Mr. Franz Vorenkamp. Franz, thanks for coming. Thanks for braving the traffic.
Oh, of course, of course. Happy to be here. I have to admit, I feel like I'm in a helicopter with this giant headset on. That was unexpected, but here we are.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is a legit place. They have all the cans and the microphones and the laptops and all that good stuff.
It's true. There are multiple knobs of many colors, all of which can be turned.
So. Yes. It's very, very high tech.
Yes.
So here we are. We're getting kind of a late start tonight, so we're going to go, I don't think there's anybody after us, so the show might be a little short if there is, but the show before us ran over, and then you had to deal with the traffic getting here.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I came in from Ann Arbor where the traffic is thick and the girls are loose, so edit that out.
This is a friend show, so I always start off friend shows by talking about how we met. I've known you for 11 years.
Yes.
The story of how we met is actually kind of interesting. It involves bonding over two things that I never thought I would ever bond with somebody my age over. And basically what happened is I was going to Schoolcraft College. I saw an ad on a bulletin board. I wanted to get into acting, and it was an ad for actors for this production company in Novi. I can't remember the guy's name now.
It was Chad Schaefer.
Chad Schaefer.
And he owned Phantom Pantheon Productions.
That's right. That's right.
Which we should really reach out to him one day.
Is he still around? Like around in the area, I mean?
He died, actually. No, I'm just kidding. I think he's alive. I see him post on Facebook every now and then. Chad, if you're out there, I'm sorry for insinuating that you were dead. But no, we are aware that you're alive, and we should get a drink sometime.
I answered this ad to a Phantom Pantheon. I haven't even heard that name, and I haven't thought of it since I did that. But I went in and did a screen test, and they said, "Yeah, we'll shop you around and see who's interested."
Right.
And then about 2 days later, a couple days later, I was in a flower shop in South Lyon. I get a phone call from this guy who's talking, and he's like, "Yeah, we're doing this kind of like monster chaser movie, and." It was really interesting, but I was like, I didn't really know what exactly I was signing up for, but I was like, yeah, I'll meet you. And you're like, I'll meet you at Schoolcraft in the cafeteria, tomorrow, and I'll be the guy in the U2 shirt. And at the time, U2 was my favorite band. So I was like, oh, well, I'm going to get along just fine with this guy. So I meet you the next day, and then you show me on your laptop the monsters that we'll be chasing. And one of them was Gigan, which is a Godzilla monster.
Right.
And I was like, this is a Godzilla movie? And you're like, yeah. And I was like, I fucking love Godzilla. I was a huge Godzilla fan
Which
as a
was
kid.
Funny because, so by the way, little backstory there. The project that Alex is referring to is, it is Alex on the show, right? Like, you got like a stage
name. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like,
that's
it. Just the stage name there, but I couldn't think of anything very quickly. Anyway, we were doing a movie back then. I had a burgeoning directing quote-unquote career, more like I was an amateur filmmaker who just really thought he had the salt to make a Godzilla movie. And so we were making one, myself and a band of merry misfits. And one of the folks who was involved with the production playing one of the main characters, well, he left abruptly for creative differences as, you know, severe as they can be when you're 16 years old. Anyway, I think Alex was the only person on the film, aside from myself, who actually cared about Godzilla or that we were making a Godzilla movie at all. Everybody else was just there for the chuckles, I think. But he took it seriously, which was really cool. And actually, I think turned in the best performance in the film.
Oh, shut up.
No, I'm serious. I've said many times and there are people who could be my witness who would say to you that, yeah, definitely, the performance I was referred to as being the proudest of was yours in the movie, you know, so that was really cool. Because when you started, you were walking into the shoes of somebody else who was already really inhabiting that role. In fact, it was written for them. And I remember when you came in for your first read and you read in your typical Alex Berg style, everybody was kind of like, wow, well, that's not the edgy and sarcastic delivery we were thinking about, you know, and we all had to kind of scratch our heads for a minute until it took about three reads until I think it was, I don't remember if it was Bob Keith or Mike Roy or one of the two leaned over and they go, this guy's brilliant. And I was like, yeah, he kind of is. It kind of works.
Well, and that was that. So that was how we met. And yeah, like that was summer of 2006 and we hung out and we've been hanging out ever since, man. Yeah, and we've been through quite a lot. This is the
amateur
years.
Movie making at the tail end of high school. If anybody was confused by my diatribe there.
Yeah, that's and you actually have had quite a career it's essentially filmmaking. I know you don't consider it to be that, but
I wouldn't call it illustrious, but I would say it has been a wild ride. I've never had to starve, you know.
Well, what, why don't you walk us through it, man? Like what? I mean, I know what you did. I already know the story, but like you, when I met you, you were working at Michael's, the
that's right,
craft
yeah.
Store,
yeah.
And then it wasn't too long after. I'd only known you maybe a year, and you mm-hmm. started working at this place in Plymouth.
Yep.
And you were there for the better part of the pretty much most of the time that I've known you.
Yeah, yeah. I was on and off there 10 years. So what had happened was really in high school, you know, I had lost my father to esophageal cancer. And I was really lucky to have some great teachers in high school who I think recognized that I was struggling and that I needed an outlet. And specifically, I was in graphic design class, which is a new course over at Canton High School. I was in that class for 3 years. And because I was a nerd with no friends anyway, I spent most of my time in my bedroom learning Photoshop and animation and that kind of stuff. And so I was a little far past the curriculum. And so my teacher, Mr. Lincourt, who is on my Facebook, if you're out there, this is your shout out officially, but this means if I win an Oscar, you don't get one then. So sorry. Just kidding. He kind of realized, I think, that I was dealing with, you know, some internal struggles and that I needed something to direct all of that energy at. And we were having a talent show, at high school. And he suggested that I enter for filmmaking. And I was like, filmmaking? I'd never done anything like that before. But my family had a camcorder. You know, so we entered this film competition at high school. And we made this thing with a monster that blew up the school. And I got in lots of trouble for it. It was great. And it really inspired me. I was like, wow, movie making is really cool, you know. I found this brotherhood and this sort of community that I had lacked most of my high school career, right? And so I immediately set about to go and do another movie after I graduated high school because it was just this great process. And so we brought more personalities into it. And that's how I met Alex and a bunch of other really great friends of mine. And it was a modest success. You know, we showed the trailer to like, I think, 300 people 2 nights in a row. In Chicago, and we should say
Godzilla Fest, which
right.
is like a Comic-Con exclusive. And I never knew that existed until I met you.
There you go.
And we went 2 years, 3 years in a row, I think. Yeah. Well, you went 3 years in a row. I went 2 years in a row.
Right.
And yeah, you showed the trailer,
it kind of blew up from there. And unfortunately, that was an epic fail. Well, not really. I mean, we did finish the movie, and it was pretty cool. But at the end of the day, there was a lot of drama with it and stuff.
We were young, too.
A long time ago. But that's not the point. The point is that out of this crazy bid to make a Godzilla movie at 16, 17 years old, we produced a lot of really awesome footage, and we learned how to use the software and the tools really, really well. And so I was able to put together a reel of what I was capable of doing, and it wasn't long after that I showed it to a local advertising agency, and they said, okay, you're hired. And before you know it, I had a job doing primarily graphic design but also some video work, and that just slowly expanded until I was doing a lot of video work. I did that for 3 years, And then I realized that maybe going to film school wasn't such a bad idea after all. Because, you know, everybody tells you, you go to film school, you're going to flip burgers the rest of your life.
That's right. I completely forgot that you were gone for a full 2 years. That's right.
A little longer than that, actually. Yeah. I was in Pennsylvania. I went to the factory, and I was mentored by Bob Tunnell and a bunch of other fantastic instructors. Tom Savini was there, the late Bill Hinesman, who shot Night of the Living Dead. He was one of my teachers as well. And it was there that I really expanded what I was capable of doing and my confidence levels. And I kind of went into there and made an ass of myself at first. And I had to kind of struggle against, you know, a lot of different personalities and figure out, well, how do you play nice with others? And I made some really great friends there in the end and walked out of there with a lot more know-how than I had otherwise. I came back home, worked at a few other places on and off, and I went back to my old job, but this time as creative director, and I was there for, I want to say, 4 or 5 years. And just recently, last November, I left to go and start my own advertising agency in Ann Arbor, and that's now a thing. It's called Studio 32, and we do all kinds of creative marketing solutions, design, and video work for our clients, and it's going pretty good.
Well, why don't you say, what are some of the people that you've advertised for, like the stuff that you've done? Because a lot of people might know of the clients that you've, you've worked for.
Well, if you ever have your programming interrupted by those Happy's Pizza TV ads, those are mine, as well as the voice on them half the time. Right now at Happy's Pizza, that's me. I did a bunch of Tom Holzer Ford commercials, which I'm sure are somewhat notorious in the Michigan area. I did some stuff for St. Joseph Mercy Hospital. One series was actually nominated but did not win for an Emmy, which was really, really cool.
You worked with Trudy Daniels from Drew and Mike, too, didn't you, at one point?
Yep. She did some voiceover work on some different ads that I did. I did something for Benson's for diabetes, and she did the voiceover on that. And
didn't you work with A. Wilford Brimley too?
Yep, that's
was that
correct.
For the diabetes?
Yeah,
thing?
Yeah, that was for Benson's Home Healthcare. And yeah, we did shoot a spot with Wilford Brimley, and I got to.
Did he say diabetes?
He did say diabetes. Yeah. What's funny? There's a great story behind that, by the way. So initially, when we were going to talk to Wilford Brimley about doing these diabetes, because it wasn't Benson's that held the diabetes commercials. That was some other company. And they basically bought the rights to Wilford to be their spokesperson to acquire him, right? And initially, I had this big, crazy idea that we would do these black T-shirts and black billboards with, like, a stencil of, like, his angry face. And it would say, "Diabetes sucks" on it. And that wasn't going to be the campaign. It's him going, "Diabetes sucks." And I thought it was going to be great for two reasons. One, because it's funny and it would catch on and go viral. And two, I wanted to be the man to get Wilford Brimley to say diabetes and not diabetes.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
He was not having either of these things. And so he thought that the sucks was offensive.
Are you serious? He thought the word sucks was offensive?
Thought it was offensive.
I would have pictured him to be more like adamant about, no, I can't say diabetes. I don't say that.
<laughs> <laughs> No, it was nothing like that. He just wasn't in the idea. He kind of wants to do his own thing with his own people, and that's how it went. And but it was a fun experience either way, getting to work on that. And
well, so you've, you know, you've built quite the career for yourself, and now that you're on your own, you know, that's the real dream there, is to own something, right? To own a business or part of a business.
Well, the real dream, I think, is to own a business that's successful, you know?
Owning anything that's – failing anything is not the dream ever.
No, right? No, I don't think so. Maybe – yeah. I can't think of anything I want to fail. Yeah, I was having a great conversation with my business partner earlier about, you know, what do you want out of life, and you know, what is the dream? Is it to be an entrepreneur or is it to be an employee? You know, and it's a struggle. It's difficult to figure out exactly how to go about grabbing the bull by its horns. And I think the best thing you can do is just kind of pour yourself into it and make it your life. And that's kind of what I'm working on doing right now, is it's a big adjustment to go from, you know, even though I've been there almost a year doing this, It's a big adjustment to go from being an employee and having a time when you clock in and then you clock out and then your mind is off to really you're on all the time. And that's kind of the mindset I'm trying to find myself in. And it's proven difficult, but I think that we're going to do just fine.
Good, man. Good. And I was going to say, in terms of like the dream, it really depends on the person. Like there's a lot of people who just want to make their money, not having to worry about, you know, being on all the time, like you were saying.
Yeah.
So we've kind of gotten your the quick version of your career story and all that. But the thing that I wanted before we go into the whining segment, because you have a topic set up that's a bit deeper than what I'm going to bring up here. But we have to talk about
this.
Grand
Canyon, by the way, everybody.
Yeah.
It's deep.
But you are the – like I was saying at the beginning, you are the only person in ever besides like my Poppy, my grandpa, my dad's dad, who has ever like bonded with me over Godzilla.
Oh, okay.
And so what I wanted to talk to you about is there is this new series. We have waited our whole lives for the American Hollywood to make a Godzilla series.
Yep.
And, you know, everything you want it to go as perfectly as possible. It's you know, your childhood, you know, hero and it's all this nostalgia and everything. I wanted to talk about that. There have been two movies released so far. There's been the 2014 Godzilla and Kong Skull Island, which came out earlier this year. There's another one planned for next year, I believe. It might be – I think actually now it's 2019. I think they bumped it back again. But that's basically a remake of Ghidorah, the three-headed monster.
Right.
And then there's a Godzilla versus King Kong, which is coming in 2020 as of this recording. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on this series and how it's going.
I would consider these movies – I mean there are good aspects to them. Like let me just say, especially the first, the Gareth Edwards Godzilla, it's not a bad film by any stretch. There are many worse films. But let me just say that across the board, these new legendary MonsterVerse movies – they are a tremendous missed opportunity to do something so special. You know, the history of Godzilla movies and why I love them and why a lot of people love them isn't just the fun characters and the sci-fi plots. And it has a lot to do with this really, really rich history of doing things the hard way, of doing things from scratch without very much money to do it with either, you know? These movies, people love practical effects. They love old school puppetry. They just adore that stuff. They do. And you know it because people freak out whenever you see it in like the Lost – I'm sorry, Jurassic World or in the more recent Star Wars. This was such a great opportunity to make this the series. The MonsterVerse series is all about practical effects. None of that CGI bull – well, I mean – you would use a lot of CGI, but I mean that would be –
it's about mixing it, like Lord of the Rings did. They always use that as the example, whatever the
way to do it is. I think that this could have been cool to make these movies the flagship practical effects series. So if you want to see really badass practical effects, just like in the 70s or 60s, the place to see that is Godzilla. That's where you should have done that, you know. And instead, it's all just more of the soulless helicopter shots of these 3D models kind of duking it out, and it just doesn't carry any weight. It doesn't really move me. Godzilla himself is totally CGI, which just seems kind of like a betrayal of the history. It's like making a Batman without a cape or horns or something. I don't know.
Well, I think the keywords there are missed opportunity. Like you said, the first Godzilla, I was so fucking excited for that. You know what was the main thing about that was the advertising campaign, the casting.
Oh, yeah.
Everything about it looked like they fucking nailed it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was dark. It was ominous. Godzilla himself seemed massive with these hugely intimidating back plates. And it's like they systematically went through and just made sure to fuck up every one of those things.
Yeah. It was – and you know what it was? And I've said this before and I will always say it. The screenplay fucking sucked.
Oh my
it was
God.
The main that was the problem is the dialogue was just lifeless. The story was kind of you could tell it had changed hands a bunch of times. It just missed fucking opportunity.
Some of the – oh my God. Daddy's home, cake every day. That's – 5 seconds of my life I'm never getting back. Thank you, Max.
The most awkward improvisation, most likely that I've ever seen on
wretched.
Film.
I don't know. It was a tremendous bore. And the one thing that I think a lot of people who were kind of on the fence about it that draw them in, they were like, oh well, Bryan Cranston, man, he's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you fuck that up? I don't know, by killing him in the first 30 minutes of the movie?
Not even. Yeah, he's in it for maybe 15 minutes.
It's like there's some devious man sitting in the background going, how do we fuck this film up, you know?
Well, film executives definitely have something to do with it. People that put the money up and then don't know how to let people do their job.
I mean, is it malicious? I mean, it's not enough. Okay, we killed Cranston off in the first half hour. Good. Got that out of the way. Oh, they're going to show Godzilla. Cut away. Don't let him see him.
Never allow a full fight to take place. Right. Always cut away.
If the film was called Military Guy Marches Aimlessly Through the City, would anybody go to see it? No. Then why'd you make that movie, dumbass?
It was just – whatever. Like you said, there were good things about the first Godzilla.
Yeah.
And I remember when I saw it, I walked out going – I liked it. And then I watched it about 5 months later and I was like, this is actually pretty fucking weak. There is a lot wrong with this. And I think expectations had a lot to do with it, because we were walking in with the 98 Godzilla on our minds, which is just a bad movie, period. Yeah. And it's so bad that it's not even considered a Godzilla movie.
Well, they bear a lot of similarities, the two of them. I mean, they look similar, and I don't just mean the
CGI, right?
Yeah. They do. I mean, anybody who says that the new Godzilla does not look like the 98 Godzilla is high on something, because they do. They have the gigantic Jay Leno chin, both of them, the flat head. They stand hunched over with these stupid triangle spikes. Who is the retard? By the way, is retard offensive these days? I don't know.
Well, it's the internet, so you can say whatever.
Okay, well, retard, fuck, shit, piss. But check it out. Who was the guy who looked at all these designs of all the Godzillas out there, right? And all of them have this very signature maple leaf-shaped plates on the back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except for one, the one from 1998. Who was the jackass who's like, you know, how about we get rid of those maple leaf shapes and put on the triangles again?
Like, well, I remember when they made that and they explained it and they were like, we were trying to make it more realistic and all. And back in those days, it's like that. I mean, there's good realistic and then there's stupid realistic.
Right.
And so the new Godzilla, I'll mention Kong Skull Island. I fucking hated it.
Wow,
I hated it.
Movie.
It was like we were just saying, like, we're tempering our criticism of the 2014 mm-hmm. Godzilla, because it seemed like they tried. At least they were trying to make a decent movie.
There was a good filmmaker behind the helm there who was, I don't know, maybe in over his head, or there was just too much going on. Now, Kong Skull Island, I'm not sure what the excuse is there for that, because, I mean, whoever was sitting there, you know what he should do? He should kill the octopus and suck it up like spaghetti. You're fired. Get out of my studio. Like, what is this nonsense?
Well, you know what it was like, and I've said this. It was like if you gave your douchebag friend from film class $1 million budget and said, God, go make a King Kong movie. That's what it was.
Try again. Try $150 million is what that movie.
Yeah.
Or more, probably. Who knows? But, yeah, that was just not...
I wouldn't even say missed opportunity for that, because nobody wanted that movie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I remember when I heard about it and I thought, oh, okay, yeah, I'll see another King Kong movie, you know, whatever. But then it just, I remember his big reveal or whatever when they showed him, and I'm like, yeah, that's pretty, I mean, okay, big monkey, you know.
Yeah,
And then another thing, the screenplay on that was even worse than Godzilla. The dialogue, oh my God, it was the worst fucking dialogue. The post-credit scene dialogue was bad. That's how bad it is.
I watched that film one time, and I'm a pretty bad compulsive Blu-ray buyer, right? Like, I didn't particularly like Suicide Squad, right? That's a shitty movie for the most part. But I have Batman versus Superman already, you know. I had to go buy that. I was at the store, and I saw King Kong, and I picked it up, and I was like, no, Bad Panda, you fucking put that down. Do not support that.
Well, I would have walked out for it if it hadn't have been for the post-credit scene, which teases Godzilla, or Godzilla King of the Monsters is the sequel name. And it's basically, like I said, a remake of Ghidorah, the Three-Headed Monster, which is where Godzilla and Rodan and Mothra team up against basically Godzilla's Joker, whose name is – he's a three-headed dragon named King Ghidorah.
I guess that Kong is just sitting this one out. He's over on his island with his – thumb up his ass, I guess.
Like, he's growing. He's growing big enough so that he can actually fight Godzilla.
Y'all can handle this. I'm just going to chill here.
So I think that out of all of the – because there's four films that are ultimately going to be made from this series.
Right.
I think out of all of them, Ghidra probably has the most potential to be the most watchable, because there's so many monsters in it that in order for them to get it right, they have to show Godzilla fight Rodan, they have to show him fight Mothra, they have to show the three of them, and then they're all going to team up against King Ghidorah. So right there.
The thing is, though, if it's more of that soulless kind of helicopter shot – when I say that, by the way, for anybody listening, it's a filmmakery term I guess I'm trying to use – I'm trying to describe these really obnoxious shots in all of these fully CGI sequences where the camera seems to swoop and fly around. And the problem with these is when you're putting CGI characters on screen and the camera is in these crazy places that a human being could never get to, guess what? It looks and it feels like a fucking video game, so it doesn't work out. It's why Pacific Rim was so goddamn great in the first half of the movie, and then it just fell on its face, because the first bit of it, all the fight scenes and things are up close and personal from human vantage points, and it just seems huge and in your face. And then for whatever reason, halfway through the film, they start doing that helicopter stuff, and it just kind of ruins it. So I'm afraid that what they're going to do with Godzilla 2 and 3 and 4 and whatever else they do is, instead of putting the camera in spots where only a human being could access, they're going to have it flying all over the place. It's going to look like a third-person video game. It just – I'm sure it'll be very pretty, you know. It's just not going to have the same weight that you're expecting.
Yeah, I think it'll be like – it'll have its good points. It'll probably be entertaining, but you won't feel anything.
Right.
And as far as Godzilla versus Kong, the director of that is the same guy who did the recent Death Note adaptation. Have you watched that yet on Netflix?
I don't even care to, because Death Note, the movie that I'm familiar with, was directed by Shizuke Kaneko, who did Gamera 3.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he didn't do the anime, which I haven't seen, but he did do the film versions of it, and it was great.
Well, I was going to say, I watched maybe 10 minutes of it, and then that was all I could take.
Really?
It is so bad. It's worse than Skull Island. It's worse than Skull Island.
Well, maybe he'll get canned. It's hard to say. Like, isn't this strange to you, though, how with these movies that are supposed to be these beloved characters and they're supposed to set up a big franchise, they're plugging in these like really untested directors who seem to have no love other than to like vaguely say shit like, oh, the original Godzilla is really dark. My mom knows that, dude. Like,
yeah. Well, you know what that is? That's just the suits putting in somebody that they know is going to listen to them. And it's just like, people are going to go see this because they're familiar with the intellectual property. It doesn't have to be art or have any aspects of art or anything like that, and it's just make us our money, and then we'll give you something that you actually really want to
do. I got news for him. You know, it's going to happen. Maybe not in our lifetime, but I hope it does. It could be in the next 10 years, honestly, just the way technology goes. But because laptops and cameras and all that stuff have just caught up so much, you know, you can shoot 4K video now pretty inexpensively, and then when you start mounting lenses on 4K cameras, it can look very cinematic. I'll tell you what, it's not going to be too long before young guys with $30,000 budgets or even less are making movies that compete with these Hollywood things.
Well, thank God. That's going to be the – I think you're absolutely right. And that's going to – we're going to see the ship kind of tilt a little bit, because right now we have all these major soulless blockbusters, and they're like – they spend so much money on them, and then they put out headlines at the end of the summer like historic box office loss. It's like, well, yeah, you spent a shit ton of money on a product that you really didn't have any love for. What do you think is going to happen? So anyway, we got to take a quick break here. We're going to be gone for about 10 minutes, and when we come back, Franz has his whining topic, and we will talk about that.
Get
so
ready for that topic.
We will be right back. American Whiner, my name is Alex. PodcastDetroit.com is the website that we are streaming on right now. All right, Franz Vorenkamp, what do you want to whine about?
Well, we could talk about how there are too many semi-trucks in the road. No, no, no. How about the hive mind?
The hive mind.
The hive mind.
You have brought this up in our conversations whenever we hang out.
Yeah.
It always comes up at least once. So why don't you start by saying, what do you mean by hive mind?
Okay. When I say the hive mind, I am talking about this overarching sort of behavior lately. It goes a step beyond people being sheep. It goes a step beyond being easily influenced. It's this notion that there is a correct and a wrong answer to almost everything. There is no gray area anymore. And now this is going to start sounding dangerously alt-right, which I swear to God I'm not. But that's just the problem. The fact that I had to go out of my way there to tell you that I'm not alt-right, and again, I'm a progressive liberal, Alex Vouch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, definitely. So. You're more liberal than I am.
There you go. The fact that you have to go out of your way to warn people and apologize and say, oh, I'm not like that, but I have these opinions about free speech, that's a big fucking problem, you know? And it is leeching into everything from music to movies to politics, you name it. It's everywhere. And what it is it's a lot of people, and by a lot, I mean like a mass majority, who are not interested in finding answers for themselves or even really formulating their own opinions. They just go online, they see one thing said somewhere, and they start repeating it. And this phenomenon, if you want to even call it that phenomenon?
Yeah, phenomenon yeah. works.
Sure. You can see it all over the place by copy and paste articles left and right. Go read some movie reviews sometime. And I guarantee you, no matter what movie it is, especially if the reviews are negative, you will find before long the same adjectives and soon even the same phrasing to describe certain things about the movie that may or may not even be a real problem. But people latch onto it. They start repeating it because they're more interested in having the answer quickly than having the right answer. And this is evident in music and movie. It's everywhere. You know, you were talking to your last guest last week about music and how you guys don't get EDM and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I have to question a lot of the music out there that's pop. Do people really love what they listen to these days? Because I don't think they do. I think that they just kind of go along with, well, this is hype right now. Why is it hype? Because someone told you? Mm-hmm. Like, does it not baffle you that Drake is the biggest artist in the world? Like,
is it Drake anymore?
He ever was, for the love of fucking God. Like, what is it? It's like kind of like echoey beats and like a dude like reading from cue cards. Like, it doesn't really sound.
Well, it can, like, even with Drake, like, I can see the appeal with Drake. Like, I don't particularly care for Drake, but
I mean, I
like,
see the appeal, but the biggest in the world, like.
Well, it's just I think there, and I've talked about this a couple of times on the show now, where especially with music, there is something fundamentally lacking in the substance when it comes to mainstream.
And that's exactly what I'm saying.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say people are told this is what's good and this is what you're supposed to like, and therefore people continue playing it.
Well, I think it's actually more than that, because I think it's a lowest common denominator type thing. We are so fragmented and splintered as a society now. In terms of tastes, and it's the internet, the fucking internet came along, and that's when this happened. Really, is when pop music at the top just has gotten shittier and shittier and shittier, and that's because they can only sell the what they know is actually people are gonna buy, and that's what the people are most likely to buy is what they're already familiar with.
Let me swerve left here before people get the wrong idea and think that I'm just hating on rap music or EDM or whatever. Here's a great example. Of Hive Mind. I'll give you two examples.
Okay.
The first one I'll use from Game of Thrones. Other day, I was scrolling through my Facebook feed, and somebody, I don't even know who, posted a comment on there about, oh, there's so many better shows on than Game of Thrones. That's a classic. Do you really think that this person sat there and they watched this episode and they said, you know, gosh, there's a lot that's wrong with this. Boy, there's so many holes in this plot. Wow. Bullshit. They saw this posted somewhere else and they just repost it. And now there's a whole legion of people saying Game of Thrones is terrible. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's better shows than that.
Well, they do it for likes, I think is what you're getting
at,
right?
It's not even likes. It's just they see something said somewhere and then they start repeating like a little fucking lemming. You know how you're gay? Know how I know you're gay? Coldplay. Right. You heard it one place, you repeat it. Do you really believe it? Did anybody ever not like that band, really? Like, it's just. That kind of shit.
Well, it's all a matter of opinion. Like I can understand, like you said, with Game of Thrones, like a lot of it has to do with, like, Game of Thrones is the biggest show on television right now. I mean, the numbers are
right.
Display that. That's not like that's a reportable fact. You can go on and say that this is one of the most watched shows on television. So
what I'm saying is more like the people who are rather a majority of the people who bitch about it on Facebook and say it's garbage or it's not good or whatever. I highly doubt that they watch it enough to even formulate an opinion. I believe they read that somewhere else and maybe they're annoyed by people liking it. Maybe they're annoyed by people posting about it a lot. So they have to post the negative version now too. But they didn't form that on their own. It's bullshit that came out of nowhere. That statement, there's better written shows than Game of Thrones on TV right now. That could have been some dude who's never seen a TV episode of anything in his life just posted it on there and some lemming saw it. Now they're regurgitating it. Now it's a buzz phrase. Mm-hmm. You know, another great example, Wonder Woman. This movie sucked. People, come on.
You didn't like Wonder Woman?
That was garbage, man.
I thought I kind of liked that. I thought the ending was kind of what is it? Stock, I think, is probably the best word for
what
it.
What was
the
good about it? Like,
I think a lot of people. There were two things that people liked about it, and the first thing was there were again expectations. The DCEU has not been particularly good up until this point. I know you love Batman versus Superman, but I'm talking about for most people.
I didn't love it. I enjoyed it in spite of some issues with it. But, I mean, just the vitriol – that's another example. The vitriol and the hate for that film when it really wasn't, I mean, that different from half the Marvel movies out there.
Well, getting back to Wonder Woman, I was saying there's the two things. The first thing is what we were just talking about. And the second thing is they wanted a strong female protagonist and just a decent movie. And I thought Gal Gadot did a pretty fucking good – I liked her. You know what I mean? I liked
great.
Her as Wonder Woman.
I thought
Woman,
James
so.
Cameron did a great job with Terminator 2. Like, have we all forgotten about Sarah Connor? How about Ellen Ripley?
Well, that's a good point. He brought that up.
We've had great female characters in movies for a long time.
That's – you know what? That is actually a very good point. And the thing is, I think that's what you're getting at, which is
right. Everybody
was just like, I see a strong female protagonist in a movie that isn't complete garbage like the rest of this series. And so it must be brilliant. And that's what you're getting at, right?
I'm sorry, but a movie is not good or bad by way of politics. It just isn't. I mean, I'm happy for everybody out there who has like a social justice hankering that got to see Wonder Woman come out and it fulfilled some kind of, you know, social justice
nourishment.
Sure. But the fact of the matter is you still have a woman in the movie who is being lauded for her beauty at every turn. She has very few speaking lines. Where was the strong it was just internet stuff. It was just people saying this. It was just people applauding this and saying, oh, it's a victory for feminists. But it really wasn't, because there wasn't anything about it. She didn't solve anything with her wits. She didn't she was mostly silent the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that the dude stole the show. He was
– Oh, Chris Pine?
Yeah, he was way funnier. He was way more interesting to watch. The end was this typical – CGI nonsense with this weird mustachioed villain that no one's even ever heard of before. Let me put it this way. If this was a DC movie and it was the Robin movie, same movie, point for point, it would have got shit panned, and you know
that is actually a really good observation. Yeah, that is probably true. If it hadn't have been Wonder Woman, it would have just been like, this is another middling superhero movie.
You want to know what it would be a great victory for social justice or the feminine movement or feminist movement, whatever you want to call it? Is a movie that is great no matter if the main character is male or female. If you can change the gender and it's still a great movie, it's a great movie, period. Front load it with female, you know, lead characters all you want. I think that's refreshing. It's great, but make them good movies and don't just give them, you know, endless accolades just because you put a woman in the role and just because the internet told you it was a good thing to do. People are going to hate me after this podcast.
No. I think you have a good point, man. And I think that taps into your hive mind. You made a really good point. Like, people, you know, they're like, I'm supposed to like Wonder Woman because it has this – it's a decent movie with a female protagonist
in it.
That alone is enough for me to go, oh, this is a victory, you know, whereas it's like, well, would you be saying that if it was a male protagonist? You know, if this was a Thor movie – what would you be saying about it?
Even if it was the biggest, you know, like most awesome female, you know, lead character ever, the movie itself still sucked, you know, and you don't get points for good filmmaking because you played the politics game. Another example, you know, people loved Jurassic World when it first came out.
I didn't. I hated it right when I saw it, man.
Gosh.
It was soulless. I didn't feel anything.
Seems like a lot of people
been talking about.
Isn't it weird how a lot of people seem to say that now? But when it came out, everyone was all about it. Why? Because the internet told everybody, this is great. It's great. It's good. It's good. Good reviews. and they just latch onto it.
And it made its money, yeah. right? And that was another thing is if it's like, oh, it made us so much money, so it mm-hmm. must be good.
It was the correct answer at the time, and that's how people responded to it. But then given more time to sit there and reflect on it, just see if I'm wrong. Everybody who's sitting there, you know, gnashing your teeth at me, I would challenge you in just 1 or 2 years to go back and see what people are saying about Wonder Woman then. They will do the same thing to that movie that they do today with the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, you know, only worse.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't good. And it's just a lot of people telling you that it was. Sorry.
So we've got about 3 minutes left here before we get to wrap up. So I always like to end the show on some note of like positivity or hope or whatever. So if how do we sort of cure ourselves of this hive mind, problem, in your opinion?
I think people are going to cure themselves of it because, like we were talking about earlier, you know, where Hollywood is, their heels are being nipped at by young filmmakers who can now make things that compete for $30,000, you know, or less. And that number's going to just keep going down. The cheaper that camera equipment gets, the cheaper that laptops get, the cheaper that music equipment gets, all of that. Look, we're podcasting right now. Man, 15 years ago, this was unheard of. Nobody was...
That's true. Yeah, it was radio stations and
that
was it, man.
And now radio's...
Or like, you know, independently wealthy people who could afford the equipment. And
pirate radio, you know, whatever you want to call it. But
yeah.
The point is that eventually... the major outlets for media consumption are not going to be the major outlets. Niche outlets will take their place. And you're seeing that happen already with like, you know, it's going to have growing pains, right? But Netflix, Amazon, you know, Hulu, there's all these sources now for media and they're exclusive. Like you can only see The Tick on Amazon. That's crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that just
mm-hmm.
bizarre to think about?
Yeah, it just continues to evolve and it continues to grow. And so there'll be complications that come with that, and then there will also be solutions that come with it.
Very soon, you're going to start seeing outlets probably on the internet, you know, and then you'll see apps emerge where it's not media generated by big companies but individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And as expression and as media creation becomes more individual, the opinions will be too. Because that's the thing is a lot of these things coming out of the bigger, more corporate world, they're easy to kind of – put into categories. They're easy to
Because that makes them easier to sell, which is the whole point in the corporate world. It's not to make the product, it's the product gives you a return on your investment.
Right.
I mean that's even at the lower level, that's still the case. But I feel like at the lower level people put more heart into what they're doing because it has to be good. They can't just throw out something and hope it sticks. They have to give it substance.
Independent artistry will reemerge to, I think, challenge the mainstream and then eventually become the mainstream and then we'll hate it too, you know? But,
right, yeah, yeah. The waves keep coming.
Yeah, it's just we're in a wayward time. And I think if you travel overseas especially too and you get a taste of other cultures, you'll see that this is a very American thing that's going on over here right now. These big divides of race and opinion and black and white thinking, they're not so prevalent in other countries. And I think that's – I guess to close it off, that's the root of it is – black and white thinking, that needs to go the way of the dodo. And right now we're really consumed by it. But we only have so much capacity. It'll get better. We did this in the 90s too, if you don't remember.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
PC culture.
Well, thanks for so much for being here, man. I've been saying like I need to make the show longer because we never have enough time to really get into the topics that we bring up. But thanks so much for being here, man.
Yeah, of course. I'll try to be more likable next time.
No, well, there will be a next time. We'll definitely have you on when I start doing the group shows. So thanks for listening, everybody. Once again, my name is Alex. The show is called American Whiner on PodcastDetroit.com. I will be back on Monday. I'm really excited about the guests that I have lined up for Monday. So I will talk to everybody then. Have a really good weekend, and we are out.